And now on to our newsmaker on the buck stops here tonight. So Ketu Mehta, the acclaimed author of Maximum City, a chronicle of Bombay like none other, is back on the literary circuit with a new novella, What Is Remembered, a book, or rather a long short story that tells the tale of Mahesh Desai, an immigrant from India trying to escape his Indianness and yet in some ways in that escape being drawn back to it again and again. From New York tonight, Suketu is with us on the program. Suketu, the obvious question will be, and it shouldn't be asked in a fiction story, but of course every writer carries bits of himself or herself into anything they write. How much of this is your story, your own story?
Well, Barka, I think that a writer is essentially a voyeur into invented lives. So, you know, create a life which has some correspondences to mine. It's like looking in a mirror and speaking to it. Except you don't know if the image in the mirror is your own or from somewhere else. But, you know, when I read a novel, I'm not really that concerned about how much of the writer is in it. I really get the writer that I'll read his autobiography. So with What Is Remembered, obviously it's an NRI, Rati, Jackson Heights that I lived. So a lot of it is mine, but then there are elements of the story completely surreal, which have no basis in fact. And I'm playing with the nature of memory. For all of us, things that are real,
about childhood. And so much of this story is about a lost childhood in India, which you recovered, not in India, but in Jackson Heights in Queens, which is the Little India section of New York.
But, you know, when it comes to memory and writing, that memory has been, in a sense, the reference point for a lot of great writing, both fiction and non-fiction. But your protagonist is actually, in some ways, trying to remember and yet he's trying to forget, because there is this very interesting scene where he's almost embarrassed of his fellow Indians as they're trying to cart in mangoes and spices at JFK, something we've all seen at all airports. And he doesn't want to be that Indian. He doesn't want to be the stereotypical Indian immigrant. So it's almost as if he's trying to disown his Indian roots, and perhaps because of that attempt to escape, he's drawn back to them again and again, maybe even involuntarily.
Exactly. I think that's a very good reading of my story because, you know, there are lots of Indians in North America, in the UK, all over, who have left India to escape a certain kind of history, and they're embarrassed by their Indianness. So sometimes you'll go into the homes of very rich Indians in Silicon Valley or in people who work in finance in New York, and there's nothing Indian about their houses, not even a little god somewhere. There's nothing Indian in their dress. They avoid Indian cooking. They'll only eat French food with a lot of tarragon in it. And I'm fascinated by these people who are trying to put behind their history to deliberately, consciously forget and reimagine themselves as something they're not. So Bobby Jindal, for example, the governor of Louisiana, recently said that he wasn't Indian-American. He was just American. His real name is Piyush. So that started a Twitter hashtag called Bobby Jindal Go White. So the protagonist in my story isn't exactly Bobby Jindal, but he's trying to forget some sort of Indianness about him, but he can't because he needs to remember his mother's last name or his mother's first name for a citizenship form. So he has to go to recover it and find himself accidentally in Jackson Heights, where almost against his will, all these memories start coming to him. Some are real, some are not. It's definitely not in India. He doesn't go back to India to recover anything. And that's why I set the whole story in this Indian neighborhood, which has these little, it's the simulacrum or facsimile of India itself. And you find these neighborhoods all over the world, like Wembley in England, or Southall, and Jackson Heights, and Fremont in California. Where we go, and it's a mixture of America and India, what's familiar, what's strange. And I wanted to present in this story this jumble of memories, of recollections, and not really have a clear, definitive ending. So it's not sure what exactly the protagonist, Mahesh, what he recovers in the end. But whatever it is, it satisfies him, and he can go back once more into America and do what he needs to.
But, you know, the Bobby Jindal parallel is interesting. It's especially interesting in the age of Trump, and you've spoken about this, where one would expect a kind of natural hostility from the Indian American community to Donald Trump, because after all, he statedly hates immigrants. And yet, we don't necessarily see that. And if you were to kind of superimpose a certain degree of political interpretation onto your story, that speaks also of trying to disown who you were, because, you know, now you want to be American. You don't want to be Indian American. You want to be American. And if you're American only, then you can like Trump.
Exactly. That's what Trump keeps saying. You got to be American. We don't need immigrants. But if you're here, you've got to be American. That term has lost its meaning. I don't feel any need to be American or Indian. I mean, I could be Brazilian. I could be Italian. I really assert strongly my freedom to choose and to be both. I can be Indian and American. I could be English if I want to. The problem with Trump and these new populists, these nationalists, is that they force us to choose, and they put up walls, literally and figuratively. And, you know, these various Hindu-American groups that claim they're for Trump, what they like is that he doesn't like Muslims, and they don't like Muslims either. It's that simple. It's got nothing to do with nationality or belonging. You know, I must also say that most Indians in the United States vote Democratic. So he's got a minority following, but, you know, they're very colorful, these guys. They light RTs around his picture, and they make a big noise, and there's not that many Indians that follow Trump, but the ones that do get a lot of publicity. This, I suspect, is why they're doing it.
But what do you think explains, I mean, you're basically saying that Indians in America who like Donald Trump basically like him because they share an antipathy for Muslims in common.
Yes, and I know these Muslims, you know, I saw them at the Narendra Modi meeting in Madison Square Garden, where there was Modi, the Gujarati Elvis, and there was a kind of, you know, Beatlemania about him. Tens of thousands of people passed Madison Square Garden, and, you know, especially Gujaratis, my fellow Gujaratis. And many of these people, you know, feel that Trump speaks for them when he says he wants a ban on Muslims. You notice there are no Muslim Indians for Trump. It's essentially Hindus, and even among the Hindus, it's really a small minority, because most Indians in this country know that the one thing Trump is anti-immigrant. He's spoken very forcefully about outsourcing. He claims that Americans lose jobs to Indians. He wants a rollback on the H-1B visas, for example, even fewer visas for Indians. So, you know, Indians who vote for Trump, I mean, they're not just shooting themselves in the foot, they're shooting themselves in the foot and eating the mangled foot.
Oh, gosh. But I know what you mean. But Gujarati Elvis, what's that? What's a Gujarati Elvis?
He's the... You know, he's got this swag, he's got this 50-inch chest. They're the same sort of blind adulation of Modi. You know, I've been in Gujarat and I've seen the effects of the Modi regime on Gujarat. There certainly was no Gujarat economic miracle. There were 7 states that had a higher growth rate than Gujarat. But, you know, he is a showman. He's got this holographic representations of himself on election stages. So, you know, Modi, like Trump, like Viktor Orban in Hungary, like Boris Johnson in the UK, like Geert Wilders, like Putin, like Duterte in the Philippines, there's a wave of these strong men around the world. You notice there are no strong women who are in the same sort of mold. And what they symbolize is order in a chaotic world. And what people are looking for in this world, which, you know, migration is only beginning. I mean, right now there's 4 million Europeans, 4 million Syrians knocking on the door of Europe. What happens when Bangladesh gets flooded and 400 million Bangladeshis have to find dry land? But what people do is that they vote for people who say, the solution is simple. I'm going to make America great again. Or, Achhe Din Aane Wale. Very simple phrases which really aren't backed up by a concrete, detailed plan. So they appeal to our innate need for simplicity. For politicians who speak the plain truth and don't bother with a lot of complicated, complex language. And actually, you know, solutions to the climate change, to migration, to inequality are complex. They can't be summed up in these catchphrases. And unfortunately, all over the world, we're seeing a rise of these populists. And, you know, connecting it back to my story, what I wanted to present in this is that for immigrants, nothing is simple. Memory isn't simple. It's not trustworthy. And they shouldn't trust politicians like Trump who present really simple solutions. It's as untrustworthy as memory itself.
Let me ask you in the end, you said, you know, you don't have to be you, Suketu. Doesn't have to be Indian, doesn't have to be American. Your protagonist, Mahesh, is also kind of struggling with that. But when a Jackson Heights can travel into New York, a Queens can travel into New York, a Little India can travel into New York, and we have these kinds of pockets everywhere, do you believe that globalization is real? Because just like the mangoes that people seem to bring in their suitcases, actually people who migrate, who become immigrants, seem to carry much more of their Indianness even as they're trying to shed it, or their own version of what they think India is.
Right. So that's why I also speak about too much history in my novel. So I'm interested in migration and what migration does to the self. And in the best case, it really opens you up to the world and you realize that, you know, no country is any better or any worse than any other. There really aren't these differences among people where, you know, Mexicans, as Trump says, are thieves and rapists, and Eastern Europeans are the ones we need to be bringing into the country. As an immigrant myself, you know, I have an American passport, but I'm also an overseas citizen of India. And I've also lived in France, I've lived in the UK, I've lived in Brazil. And all of that travel has taught me the futility of this kind of nationalism. And, you know, the people who brought us independence, Gandhi and Tagore, also didn't believe in nationalism. I mean, they wanted independence, but really, you've got to go no further than, you know, look in our own holy books, which say, let good thoughts come to us from all sides, which is an implicit acknowledgement that good thoughts aren't the preserve of any one side, that they come from all sides. The entire earth is our home. And really, in this age of nationalism, of walls, I think every one of us needs to assert that loudly and clearly. The earth is our home.
That's interesting, because in India right now, I don't know if you know this, but nationalism has almost become like a political construct. It has permeated mainstream politics. It is the subject of fiery television debates every night. And it is really, I think it's a global pattern almost. And that's kind of interesting that you point that out. I have to end by asking you, who do you think your protagonist, Mahesh Desai, would vote? If this story were to have a sequel, would he be voting Trump or Hillary?
He might be voting libertarian, actually. He's recovered something about his memory, and he can go forth. And I think people who made that connection with their past would be highly unlikely to vote for Trump, because the past that Trump is promising is disconnected from the present. In fact, it's disconnected from reality itself.
Suketu Mehta, pleasure to have you on the program tonight.